I'm Alistair Campbell from The Rest is Politics.
Nish Kumar here from Podsave the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Podsave the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September.
Hey, wake up! New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating US Wendy's.
Hello, it's Rob here with a heads up to anyone listening with young folk that this episode contains a lot of talk about alcohol. Cheers. Which boozy drink is the water of life?
Where did the word cocktail actually come from?
And why are there two different ways to spell whiskey?
Cleanse your palate, pick your poison, pour a pint and go bottoms up on this episode of Words Unraveled.
Serve neat and on the rocks. Welcome to another Words Unraveled. I'm Rob Watts from the YouTube channel Rob Words.
And I'm Jess Safaris, author of the etymology books Once Upon a Word and Words from Hell. And today we are offering up a delectable flight of word facts for the curious etymelier, are we not?
Etymelier. I like that a great deal. Yes, we're hoping to leave you in high spirits with this episode all about booze, alcoholic drinks, alcohol. Alcohol, now, that's where we should start. Because that's an interesting etymology in itself, isn't it, Jess?
It absolutely is. As you may be able to guess, if you've encountered any other word that begins with A-L, that is the Arabic definite article, because this word is from, ultimately inspired by, mutilated from, an Arabic word.
Yeah.
You know how that happens.
So it means the something.
And it means the coal. It is like the same dark substance you would use as eye makeup. And they've been using this for like 5,000 years. It's typically made of antimony sulfide or lead sulfide. And it was produced through sublimation of the mineral, which yields like a powder deposit. And the idea here is that it is considered the essence or spirit of any mineral. The literal meaning of this word is essence or spirit. And here you're seeing the connection to alcohol, right? It is a spirit. Similarly, European alchemy borrowed the term alcohol to refer to like fine powders and other products similarly produced by sublimation and then distillation.
Right. So actually the word alcohol is, to English speakers, rather newer than a lot of our words for different types of alcohol then, isn't it?
Yeah, it's 1600s, I think, is when we started talking about alcohol as a catch-all for intoxicating beverages.
Right. What were we calling them before that? Or was there anything that linked those names?
Well, we would talk about like the spirit of a liquid, which is quite a bit older. Alcohol also, like, it kind of shows up in the 1500s, but it was more of a descriptor for the distillation process. So alcohol of wine was the way you would refer to like the fluid and the intoxicating aspect of it.
Yeah. So wine is a good old word.
Right. That's one of the oldest alcohols that we've partaken of.
Yeah. And wine itself is one of those interesting words because it's a word that enters the Germanic languages before English even exists from Latin via the Romans, who are having these encounters with Germanic tribes in Northern Europe. And they're bringing their fancy things like their wine, and they're building their fancy things like their streets.
Castles.
And their castles. And they're talking about miles. And they're just a few of the words that we get from the Romans before. Yeah, before the English language even exists. And then those words get brought over to the British Isles and the Anglo-Saxon language becomes Old English.
Wine is like Latin before it was cool.
Yeah. Yeah. What does it mean though?
It means vine. It's one of those words where it's just like, it's the word for the vine. In fact, they are basically etymologically the same word. Wine and vine are the word for wine.
The word. Yeah. And they're pronounced, wine is pronounced vine in all sorts of other languages, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah. With a V or a W, they just switch around.
Mm-hmm. And it also shows up in words like vintage too, which have, same idea here. It's a thing that comes from the wine and the vine.
Yeah, and vinegar, which we've talked about before, which means vinaigre is sour wine.
It's like aggressive wine.
Sharp wine. Sharp. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Beer. Beer is another juicy old word.
And this apparently was brewed, and something we would call beer has been brewed in English history back to like 13,000 years ago. It's very old.
Oh, wow. And the word beer is quite interesting insofar as it's only really used among the Germanic languages. I'm going to get a bit technical here. In the West Germanic languages, so that's English, Dutch, German, those languages refer to it as beer, but the other Germanic languages, so the Scandinavian languages, refer to it as a variant on ale, öl, or something along those lines, which I think I was recently in Oslo in the wonderful historic museum that they've got there, and they had something called a baktiate. Not a baktiate is. It's an item of jewelry, but it looks like a coin. It's like a little disc. They had one from the 5th century, and all it said on it was, it had a picture of a woman, and it just said alu on it, which is, it's not even Old Norse, it's before Old Norse, word for ale, right? So someone had just made this item of jewelry that is an homage to their favorite drink.
Amazing. Isn't, I recall reading that the Proto-Indo-European root here means like bitter?
Root of ale, that would be.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, because traditionally ale is less hoppy than beer.
There's a historian in particular who's well respected for the distinction between beer and ale named Peter Matthias, I believe, who said that ale referred to unhopped fermented malt liquor native to England until the 17th century, while beer was hopped and from the continent.
And we also in England call certain types of ale bitter as well to this day.
Excellent.
Yum, 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 yum.
And then beer is probably from a root meaning like to drink, right?
Well, there are a few different theories about beer. Yes, there's one that it's from a root meaning to drink, a Germanic root meaning to drink. But there's also another theory that it's from a Latin, a Romance root meaning to drink as well, along the lines of the Spanish biber, right, which means to drink.
Which we get in imbibe.
Yes, we do. And an old French word for beer was bièvre, which actually links the word to the Russian, the Slavic word for beer, which is pivo. Anyway, so that's the Romance, but it's probably from a Germanic root, and it's either from a word meaning to drink. It might be also be from the same root as barley, which is quite a persuasive idea, isn't it? Or it's from another word that also gives us to brew. So we don't know where beer comes from. It seems a bit of a coincidence, doesn't it, that it's so similar to bière in French, but it might just be a bit of a coincidence. Speaking of coincidences, the Swedish öl, which means ale, which means beer, is the generic word for beer, is exactly the same as the German word for oil, which is öl as well, but it's pure coincidence that they've ended up just being this O umlaut L thing just because of where they've come from and how the sounds have morphed, but they're actually not related.
Interesting little homonym there.
Yeah, we don't know exactly where beer came from, but it came from there a long time ago.
One of my favorite features of ale appearing in Old English is, and we may have addressed this before, but that you could tack the word ale onto a word to turn it into a party. Like a scythe ale is a party post-harvest, a bride ale was a bridal party, and in fact is the origin of the adjective bridal, which doesn't have that Latin ending on it, surprisingly. It was originally a noun.
That was such a revelation when you told me about that one.
Right. It's so goofy. But I mean, it makes perfect sense that you would read that and think it's an adjective.
And a word that we've mentioned a few times is booze already. And I should have mentioned that the word beer, the theory that it comes from to drink, which I think is maybe where you were trying to lead me to, is that it comes from the same Dutch word that gives us booze. It's boozen, which is to guzzle. It's a Middle Dutch word, but that's where we get the word booze. And booze is originally a verb meaning to drink to excess, from which we then extrapolate to the noun.
I don't know completely whether this is true, but I have read that, and it is true that booze was picked up in the US around the 1800s and evidently was influenced by the name of Edmund Booz, B-O-O-Z, who is a Philadelphia-based distiller who opened the E.G. Booz Distillery in 1840 and manufactured that iconic log cabin whiskey bottle. And apparently his name helped make that word catch on a little bit more. Whether that's true, I think that might be a Thomas Crapper situation, but it certainly, the timeline actually works on that one.
He's literally Mr. Booz.
Right.
Mr. Booz. I love that. So he was a whiskey distiller?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Interesting thing about whiskey is the spelling of whiskey varies between countries. And you say, well, it varies between Scotland and the United States, but the actual, you know, key variation is between Scotland and Ireland, where it's spelled with an E, W-H-I-S-K-E-Y. And that's how it's spelled where you are, right?
That's right. Though if you are looking at Scotch, many people still spell it without the E.
Ah, right, yeah. I would do the same. I would spell Irish whiskey with an E and Scotch whiskey without it. And I think the theory goes that the Irish just wanted to differentiate their drink from the inferior Scottish alternative. So they popped an E in there.
But where does whiskey come from in general?
The word itself is from, well, it's a Gaelic term rather than a Gaelic word as such. And it's, let me try and get it right. So this is the Irish version of it. It's Ishka Baha.
That's about what I read too. Like I practiced before this and Ishka Baha or Ishka Baha was what I ran into.
And it's something very similar in Scottish Gaelic as well. And what does it mean, Jess?
It means water of life.
It does, yeah. And as you search around, you find that lots of spirits are named Water of Life or a variant on it. For example, aquavit, which I also drank when I was over in Scandinavia as well. And also the Romans drank something called, well, I don't know actually if they drank it, aquavitae. I don't know if that was something you would drink. I think it was very, very strong. I think it's more or less just pure alcohol, aquavitae. I might be wrong about that. But then eau de vie is a French fruity brandy. And then there are just other boozes that are named after water that you might not expect. For example, vodka means
little water, right?
Little water, yeah. Voda is the Russian for water, and then you put the ka and it just makes it a little bit cuter. Yeah, a little sort of darling water. It tells you how important these drinks were to people, I don't know.
Right. You know, it could be that it, you know, livens up your gathering, so to speak, or it could just be its use in medicine. It could be the distillation process. It could just be the idea that everybody likes a little booze.
Yep. And then there's a Spanish term, which is aguardiente. That's a portmanteau of agua and ardiente, which means burnt water, it means. And that's another spirit, aguardiente.
Interesting. Huh.
We can go down a whole sort of stream of different etymologies for spirits from all around the world. I mean, for example, I just mentioned burnt water. Brandy comes from brandewijn, which is Dutch or was Dutch for burnt wine. Burnt in that case means distilled. Right. What are some more? Have you got some more of these, Jess?
Well, the one that was certainly brewed around the area where I grew up is moonshine.
Yeah, so what was going on there?
So moonshine is like obviously a word for, you know, the light of the moon. There's kind of a fun story about this. It's probably apocryphal, but it's a fun one to tell. It became a word for booze in the 18th century, usually illicitly brewed alcohol, like in Appalachia and a couple other places. It refers to like unaged corn mash whiskey in particular. But a moonshiner could be applied to anyone who home distills spirits of any kind, literally by the light of the moon, because it is illicit. So there is a little bit of a story about this as well. apparently in the 1700s in the English county of, it's Wiltshire, right?
Yeah.
There was a secret route of like a booming brandy smuggling business. And according to this legend, the locals would hide contraband barrels of French brandy from the customs officers by sinking them to the bottom of ponds. And when they were caught attempting to retrieve the brandy from the bottom of the pond with a long rake by the light of the moon, they played dumb, pointing at the reflection of the moon in the pond and saying they were trying to rake in a wheel of cheese, which also like Moonraker comes up sometimes as an alternative for Moonshiner.
But that's not why the James Bond film is called that, right? Or the James Bond book.
I actually don't know.
I wouldn't think so. It's not a very likely story, is it?
Oh, no, not at all.
I'm just trying to finish this wheel of cheese from the bay.
This is one of those like merry tales of the Mad Men of Gotham situation, just like 400 years later.
The word moonshine reminds me of another one, hooch.
Mm-hmm, that's a good one.
I don't know what that means or where it comes from.
So this is a Klondike Gold Rusher's interpretation of the name of an indigenous people in what is now Alaska. In their language, the name of the people and the language says like it means like people of the tides, and then the name of the village means Grizzly Bear Fort. And apparently they made some spectacular booze, like a rum-like liquor that became so wildly popular among the Gold Rushers that it became the name of the liquor, or the word hooch, basically. Is sort of not quite illicit spirits, but unofficial spirits.
I was looking at where the word rum comes from, if you're interested.
Yeah, I would love to.
It's thought to be from either the word rumbustion or the word rumbullion, which are both words for a racket, as in like a noise or sort of chaos, and it's just basically a reference to the sort of carnage that comes with drinking too much rum.
I've also read that rum as a solo word was often tacked on to phrases and other words in like Romani dialects, and it meant like good, fine, or excellent. So you could say rum kicks, which were like really nice trousers with extra embroidery and fanciness on them.
Right.
And rum booze was good liquor.
Ah, okay. Because we still have the word rum. It's not used very often, and certainly not by anyone sort of younger than, say, me, I would say. The word rum in British English, anyway, means something that's bad, you know, something that's off. It's a little bit rum that. There's something not quite right about it.
Maybe that's sort of a pejoration of that earlier sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or the opposite way around.
Right. In
the Romani dialects. Yeah, something's happened for those to be opposites. Oh, does that mean we've stumbled across a contronym?
Ooh, maybe.
Yeah, I think we have. Rum can mean both great and terrible. Like that.
I love it.
And then gin?
Yeah, gin is an interesting one.
It ultimately comes from juniper, right? The French word for juniper, because the Latin word for juniper was juniperius, or was it juniperius, which is actually very similar to the word juniper. However, something happens that means that the French word ends up being Genève.
Genève.
Yeah. I think it's thought that the reason that it changes to something so similar to the name of the place of Geneva is that there was a misconception that Geneva was where it was from.
Little folk etymology there.
Yeah. But it's actually invented in the Netherlands. It's originally a much, much stronger drink, so flavored with juniper berries. And nowadays, that very same strong drink exists, but it's known as Holland's gin or Dutch gin. But the gin that we enjoy the most now was originally concocted in London as a slightly milder version of what they were drinking in the Netherlands. And the word gin comes from the Dutch take on that French word, Genève.
That's neat. It's also unrelated to the word cotton gin, which is a shortened form of the word engine, basically.
Oh, really? So what is cotton gin? I haven't heard that.
A cotton gin is a large machine for harvesting cotton.
Ah, okay. Right.
Sorry, that was pertinent to my life growing up because I lived in cotton country.
I've enjoyed learning about some of the US alcohol culture here because it's so different to Europe and certainly in the UK as well. I guess a lot of that's down to prohibition, I suppose.
Interestingly, the Jack Daniel's distillery, which I'm sure you've heard of,
bourbon,
is in a dry county in Tennessee. So you're not allowed to sell liquor there, except they have some way around it. It's in Lynchburg, Tennessee. That one's a cool one, too. There's a lot of history around that one. And then I also grew up near like Kentucky bourbon country. So that's mostly my drink.
And were cocktails invented in the US? I've got that in my head.
Yes, as a matter of fact, they were, but not by an American.
Oh, go on.
So first of all, we've gotten into a bit of a social media conversation around the origin of cocktail.
Yes, we have. Yes.
You see a lot of false origins around this. And there is a particular reason you see a lot of false origins around the history of the word cocktail. And it all comes down to H.L. Mencken. Are you familiar with him?
I am not. Who is this guy and where is he from?
Journalist, cultural critic, English language scholar, also known as the Sage of Baltimore. There's where he's from. Also an unrepentant troll. He was the orchestrator of some particularly iconic cultural satire, which he called the great art of synthesizing news, which like that kind of smacks of fake news, but it was,
doesn't it?
In his era, more in good fun than in a bid to actually like undermine truth. But for example, in 1917, he fooled a lot of his readers into believing that bathtubs didn't exist in America until the 1850s. And it was called the Great Bathtub Hoax.
Well, then what were making their moonshine in?
One of his other pieces was The Secret History of the Cocktail, and it contained several different theories about the origin of the word cocktail. And some of them probably contain truth. One of them in particular is probably the truest, and it's that cocktail is from the French coquetier, meaning an egg cup. And this is supported by the fact that Creole apothecary Antoine Amédée Péchaud, the guy who created Péchaud's bitters, made mixed drinks with his famous Péchaud bitters and served them in an egg cup. In particularly the Sazerac cocktail, which is sometimes said to be the first cocktail.
Okay, so there is a link to cocks in there, that explanation, which there isn't with one of the other theories that gets bandied around, which is that it's to do with horses, right?
Right. A horse's docked tail, apparently. The idea is that apparently you would dock the tail and shape it like a coxcomb if it was a mixed breed horse, which...
You mean like... So a mixed breed horse is like a mixed drink.
Right. So it would have a cocked tail. I think that
I don't know. I mean, there's something persuasive about it. I mean, it works. And how do you get from, in such a short amount of time, from coquetier, or however you pronounce it, to cocktail?
I think with a Creole accent is how you get there.
There we go.
That makes sense to me. But I think since he was French and was Creole, for French Creole rather, I think that probably just smashed up within New Orleans culture. Some of the other theories are that it comes from the phrase cock ale, a combination of stale beer and bread made for roosters trained for cockfights, or that it was the last little bit or tail of liquid from a bartender's tap, also called a cock.
Yeah, a tap is called a cock, isn't it? But I don't know.
Another one, and it has no supporting evidence whatsoever, is that in the medieval era, an English army regiment with feathered caps was known as the Cocktails, and the drink was supposedly named after them by Scottish distillers.
Okay, and do all of these theories come from that chap you were talking about?
He mentions all of them. Whether or not he originated all of them or some of them is unknown, because he also made up facts about bathtubs.
Great. Okay, good. So we really don't know where the word cocktail comes from, do we?
No, we don't. But the one that makes the most sense, chronologically speaking, is the Péchaud situation, the coquetier or egg cup situation. That one appears to align with the appearance of the word in media of the time.
Okay, I'm going to put that at the top of my list then. What about the etymologies of some cocktails? We could talk about those. You know, I was just away in Hamburg, and I had something called a Negroni Spagliato.
Mm.
So people might know what a Negroni is, which, by the way, is just named after a count who wanted to sharpen up their drink. So they added some gin to it and it became a Negroni. But the Negroni, I should explain what's in a Negroni. It helps, doesn't it?
Right.
So Count Camillo Negroni, Negroni, probably, was an Italian aristocrat who's responsible because apparently when he asked to stiffen up his usual aperitif of sweet vermouth and Campari and soda water, he wanted some gin in there. And so that became a new drink called the Negroni. But the Negroni Spagliato that I had, Spagliato means messed up, mistaken, wrong.
Negroni. I like it.
It's a messed up Negroni where, so I actually went to, I feel like I'm talking, I don't travel that much, but I went to the bar in Milan where this version of Negroni was invented. And the story they tell there is that purely by accident, one of their bartenders, their barman, put sparkling wine in the Negroni instead of gin. So you have it with Prosecco instead of gin. And it, I would say it's a much nicer drink, personally. A lot less bitter.
I've made some poor decisions on Negronis. I'm not sure a messed up one would help me.
For me, it's Negroni Spagliato all the way. Yeah.
I went to a party, a Halloween party in New York City one year, dressed as Smaug the dragon.
Of course.
They had an open bar with an unlimited amount of signature Negronis. I don't remember all of that night.
She's a very drunk dragon.
yes indeed. All of my instances of not remembering what I have done after consuming alcohol, which, caveat here, don't do that. It's real bad for you. Don't do that. But all
this
of
is
the
what Gen Z know, that it's just pointless.
To be fair, this has only happened to me like twice, but in both instances, I was in costume. So the other time I was dressed as Amelia Earhart.
I love your choices of costume. These are wonderful.
I have apparently less self-control on Halloween night.
Another peril, of course, is I'm sitting here now with a cold that I caught at a beer festival. So that's another thing. Just stay away from people and stay away from booze. That's how we stop this video on YouTube being demonetized. Don't drink booze, kids.
Don't drink. It's terrible for you. Just learn about it and avoid it at all costs.
Any more cocktails, Jess?
Well, I always think it's kind of neat that, well, not neat, illogical, I guess.
Neat or neat or watered down.
Unintentional. Beautiful. But the mimosa is not named for the fact that it contains mimosa flowers, but just that it's the same. Some of them are the same color of yellow, which I feel like that's a little bit of a cop out.
I had a mimosa the other day. I'm talking about all these experiences I have. What a colorful life I live. And they tend to involve booze. But I realized I haven't ordered a mimosa before because we call it something else in England.
What's it called?
We call it a Buck's Fizz. This mix of sparkling wine and orange juice.
Who or what is the buck in that situation?
I do not know. I don't know why it would be fizzing either. This is the sort of thing I should look up.
Well, mimosas are made with champagne.
Yeah, I know, but why would a buck be fizzing? We're assuming that the buck is some sort of animal. Why would it be fizzing?
It's got to be named after someone. A lot of cocktails are like named after a person or like go after a name. Like Margarita is a woman's name. I don't know if it's a specific woman. I haven't been able to figure that out, but it is named after the name Margarita or Margaret.
Yeah, there are a few theories about that one, right? They're like, oh, it's actually named after someone really historical, or it's not. It's named after like the wife of the barman or the girl that the barman's really into that day. Bloody Mary's another one of those, probably named after Queen Mary the First of England, but also maybe not.
Most references to that are.
Yeah, right. Exactly. That's a big topic, isn't it? Bloody Mary and how bloody she actually was. I mean, it's like, oh, well, she's no more bloody than her dad, Henry VIII. But at the same time, she did on one occasion order, you know, the burning at the stake of 280 Protestants as heretics. So she wasn't unbloody.
Just a little crispy instead. More like Crispy Mary.
a Crispy Mary. How could you? You could sort of make that, couldn't you? Because it's a tomato-based thing.
Wait, I've seen them with bacon in them, yeah. Like, they'll add like a little strip of bacon.
No, sorry. This is another one of those American things. I don't like Bloody Mary.
We'll add a strip of bacon to anything.
Actually, they're pretty multifarious in terms of what you can put in a Bloody Mary, right? You put some celery salt in there. You can put some Tabasco sauce in there, some Worcestershire sauce in there.
This is not my drink.
well, it's a hangover cure if you're looking for one. Well, it's not. I mean, there is no such thing as that.
Yeah, right.
I was laboring under the misapprehension until we were researching this video that the Virgin Mary, so the non-alcoholic version of the Bloody Mary, was the original virgin drink and the rest of them are named after that. But it is not true. because it just seems so darn convenient that you can have a Bloody Mary and also a Virgin Mary, right?
I would think that that would be a daiquiri maybe or something like that, or a pina colada, because those are some of the easier ones to make taste the same.
Yeah, you're right. There were Virgin daiquiris before there were Virgin Marys. And what does daiquiri mean?
Oh, I actually don't know that one. I didn't get that one.
It's actually a place. It's a place in Cuba where it's invented, daiquiri.
This happens.
It's near Santiago de Cuba.
Martini is also probably named after Martinez. Well, okay. Apparently the theory that it's from Martinez, California has been a bit debunked, but it's probably from a place, you know?
Yeah, well, is it not from the brand name that was the sort of leading producer of vermouth? Vermouth.
Yes, it is from Martini and Rossi, but apparently that was also connected, like a Martinez cocktail also existed before that.
Yeah. It's
the timeline on this one is kind of funny.
Yeah, there's a bit chicken and or cock and egg cup. Chicken and
very
egg.
Nice.
Oh, it's almost nice, isn't it? I know we got into the daiquiri, caipirinha as well. That's what I think of as a very exotic South American cocktail as well. But that's from a Brazilian word meaning a young peasant lady.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, because it's quite cheap and easy to get hold of. Caipirinha.
Oh, no.
No, I don't mean that. No, I just meant that a young peasant lady might be able to partake of one. Not that she is one.
I mean, are you sure it's not the other way around? Because
yeah,
that,
I mean,
that
I
said,
now you said it. Now you said it. I think I'm wrong. Oh, it probably is that. That's awful. Like, I describe it.
You're
so.
Like, it's perfectly innocent. She would just be drinking the alcohol. It's fine. It's definitely not a comment on
her. I described it so perfectly misogynistically as well. Cheap and easy to get hold of. Oh. I said it again now. Mm. Oh, dear. Other cocktails. Let's go on to some of those, shall we? Mojito. That's a fun one.
Oh, that is a fun one. What does that mean?
So, wet little thing.
Of course it does.
It's from mojadito, which is Spanish for wet little thing. It's a little moist thing. And think of that next time you enjoy one. I guess it refers to the moistness of the leaves that you put inside it, because all drinks are moist, aren't they?
Right, to some degree.
To some degree.
A little more than that.
Even a dry martini is moist.
Let's see. The Old Fashioned was apparently called the Old Fashioned. That's my favorite drink. And it was named that in cocktail books dating back to like the 1800s because it's simple to make, I guess, and people have been making it for a good long time.
Yeah, I think it's because it doesn't involve any silly, frilly, juicy drink ingredients either. It's, you know, it's good, pure, solid, old-fashioned style of cocktail, which is a mix of liquors. By the way, I think British viewers and listeners will find it a bit strange to hear me saying liquor, because we don't generally use the word liquor in Britain.
What do you use?
We say spirits. So
oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, I worked in a supermarket on the alcohol section, and it was called beers, wines, and spirits. We use the word liqueur sometimes, but that's something different. That is a...
Yeah, that's like a...
Actually,
yeah.
I don't know. What's the difference between a spirit and a liqueur? I guess a liqueur is a type of spirit, but there's something...
I usually associate it with like sugary, syrupy stuff that you would add to your cocktails. Kahlua is a liqueur.
Kahlua, yeah. You make a nice espresso martini with that one.
So Kahlua is a coffee-flavored liqueur or liqueur, depending on how Q-y you want to make that word.
Yeah. I don't call it liqueur.
Liqueur or liqueur. Either way. It's from a Spanish sherry-producing family that coined the name, and it means house of the Acalhua people, which is a group of allies of the Aztec people, apparently.
You know, it does have a sort of Aztec sound to it, that word.
Right, but it's very modern. Like, this is like 1930s. We have culturally appropriated that word.
Yeah, I was not going to go there with the cultural appropriation, but that does kind of sound like it, doesn't it? Let's not get sued by the Kahlua people, for goodness sake. Let's not throw them into a storm, because I don't know any other coffee liqueurs that I can put in my espresso martini. I make a good espresso martini, Jess.
Do you?
Yeah, I make a really good one.
This is very millennial of you. That is. I'm impressed, though.
I know. I worked in a cocktail bar in London for a very short amount of time because I was very bad at it, because I could not remember any of the recipes. I was not fired, but they did cut my pay. So I left and went to work in the pub next door.
Politely encouraged to depart.
Yes.
Have we addressed vermouth? I think we mentioned it, but we didn't say what it means.
No, what does it mean?
It's basically a Germanized word for wormwood, which was what was used traditionally to aromatize it. That's the same wormwood that's present in absinthe, which can have both poisonous and hallucinogenic effects, but doesn't in its modern form.
Wormwood to me is just screaming out folk etymology. I wonder if it is one. Do you know?
Absolutely. Wormwood is folk etymology. Its actual pieces aren't completely known, but it's definitely an Old English Germanic something. And it might be like wear and mod, which were like courage man or something like that.
Oh.
And it's because it was used in alcoholic beverages and as like an aromatic for things like absinthe and vermouth.
I see.
Yeah, so we have a nice connection there. And apparently it has to do like with its bitter aftertaste or something, whatever else. Apparently the folk etymology explanation, though, is that it was used to protect clothes and bedding from moths and fleas, which definitely is something that you want to put in your body.
Yeah.
But it's mentioned in the Book of St. Albans, too, as a medicine for a hawk that has mites.
Oh, good to know. Okay, so next time my Harrier...
Next time your hawk has mites.
Yeah. Infestation.
I actually do have a hawk in my backyard, and I love him. He, like... I don't know if it's a male or a female, but this hawk will regularly crash into this little ornamental pond I have, which is full of frogs, and like land in it and be upset and make eye contact with me and then fly away.
Is this a wild hawk or is it one that you...
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it is wild.
There's like a war going on between my crows and my hawk, and it's a whole thing. And I don't think they realize that I'm friends with both of them.
The garden soap opera of Jester Farris's house. German liqueurs, schnapps, by the way. It comes from a verb meaning to gulp, schnappen.
It does sound like a lip-smackingly delicious something, schnapps.
But here's an interesting thing. Schnapps is spelt with two P's in English, but only one P in German these days.
Is that a branding decision?
No, it's just lost one of the P's over time because it was two P's in German. But that's just a little observation I had. You know, they have this lovely term in German, Schnapsidee. Which is an idea that you have that seems like a really good idea at the time, but actually turns out to be a very bad idea. The idea is the sort of idea you'd have after after a few schnapps.
That sounds appropriate. I've also read that it is related to, like, the word snap was sometimes used for like a little bit of alcohol in the past, and today we would use like nip in a similar way too, and it's all from that same concept of a small mouthful or something.
Well, we're on about small mouthfuls. Sorry, I'm hopping around here, but dram is another one. That's one that gets used a lot. I think it's thought of as Scottish slang. You have a wee dram of whiskey. By the way, Scotch whiskey is basically the only situation where you can use the word Scotch and it'd be okay. Right. Or that or a Scotch egg. Do you know what a Scotch egg is?
I had one the other day, as a matter of fact.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Is that a common thing to find in the United States,
then? No. It was an overpriced gourmet interpretation of a Scotch egg.
That is so funny because it's the cheapest food.
You find them in like pubs and things, but they're usually overpriced. And I've been imagining ways to like make one at home, and that's going to be my next cooking adventure. I think is making my own Scotch egg.
So it's a boiled egg covered in sausage meat and breadcrumbs. But anyway, the dram, here's an interesting fact. A dram is a measure. It's actually originally a weight, and it's the same weight that also gives us dirham, the currency.
Oh, yeah.
And the drachma, the old Greek currency.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Really?
How good's that? Yeah.
Like the Arabic currency in Morocco.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Cool.
The dirham. Huh. Yeah.
I didn't know that. That's really neat.
Yeah. I mean, it's not so strange to think that a Mediterranean country like Morocco would have a similar word to the Greek. Can we talk briefly about Asian booze?
I would love to. I don't know much about this at all.
Which is fascinating, really, because the most consumed alcoholic drink in the world is a Chinese drink. Have you heard of baijiu?
I have, yes.
Yeah, which means white liquor.
I guess I know a little something.
There you go. The Chinese word for, or the Mandarin word for beer is piju, right? Which has that ju at the end of it that just means alcohol. The p bit is just a Chinese attempt at the word beer, which I absolutely love.
Oh, man, I love... Oh, man, I love when languages do that. It's so interesting.
Well, yeah, exactly, because you have to make it fit with how your language works and how it coordinates vowels and consonants together. For example, the Japanese word biru, which means beer, is actually the Dutch word beer, but they have to put that u on the end of it because they need a vowel sound at the end.
That's so neat.
Oh, sake. Can I mention sake while we're on about Asian drinks? So sake, what we call sake, is not what the Japanese call sake. Sake in Japanese is just a very generic word for a type of booze, for booze, really.
Oh, I see.
What we call sake in Japan, they call nihonshu, which means Japanese liquor.
But it's interesting that both of those terms are like equally kind of literally generic.
Yeah.
Rather than like here, it's like rice wine, you know?
Yeah, but that's what nihonshu is. Yeah, it's rice wine. And the Japanese symbol, which is actually a Chinese symbol, is, you know, it's one of those ones that's a pictogram of sorts. For sake, it's the pictogram for alcohol, and if you look at it, it looks like a bottle.
Oh, that's neat. That's so neat. Yeah. I need to learn more about Japanese in particular, but multiple languages with the like pictogram oriented. Here I use the word orient. Dang it.
Good luck with Japanese there, because they've got three writing systems. You know, they've got these two that are phonetic based. And that is why, by the way, you have to have biru, because those characters, they all represent a consonant and vowel sound together. So you can't just have the consonant on its own at the end of beer or beer, if you're going to pronounce it properly, I suppose. Unless it's an N. You can end Japanese words with an N.
Interesting. That's very neat. Now that we're thoroughly sloshed, do you think we should talk and close out with a discussion of what the many terms for drunkenness, now that we're properly liquored up here?
Yeah, now we've absolutely had our fill of the alcohol. How are we going to describe ourselves, Jess?
Let's see. Some of my, you have a longer list.
Oh, yeah.
But some of my favorites are shellacked, ossified, paralyzed, blitzed, tore down, tore up, pissed, crocked, flushed, glazed. And there are more. There are many more, right?
Do you use pissed in America to mean drunk as well as to mean angry?
You don't not. I mean, it's mostly like if someone says you are pissed, they're probably going to assume you're angry. But, you know, if you say it in the right context, someone will understand, much like all of these other words, which we've discussed, like using basically any past participle can mean drunk.
Yeah, there was this study done by a couple of German linguists. Their names were Sanchez Stockhammer and Uhrig. And they took a very dry approach to trying to count how many terms there were in Britain for being drunk. And they settled on the number 546. And they got this number by looking through various dictionaries and thesauruses of note, you know, of record, the ones that are legit. And then where they found, they ranked them. So ones that got, some of them got like mentioned in all four sources. Some of them only got mentioned in one. And then they compiled this list from which I will read you a few if you like. So this is from top. So these are the most common ones. And these, I will say I've heard all of these. Bladdered, legless, mashed, mullered, pickled, pie-eyed, plastered, sloshed, smashed, trashed, wasted, bevied, blasted, blitzed, blutered, blottoed, bombed, cabbaged, canned, fuddled, hammered, langered, lashed. Lashed is a good one from my youth. Ossified, you mentioned. I actually haven't heard of ossified, but I like that one. That's quite grand, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean you've been turned to bone?
That's what it sounds like, right?
Yeah, I think that's what it means.
Mm-hmm.
Paralytic, rat-arsed, screwed, slaughtered, sozzled, steaming, stewed, stoned, tanked, tiddly, tight, well-oiled, wrecked, zonked, and Adrian Quist.
Adrian Quist.
Must be rhyming slang, just realized.
That makes sense. Yeah, in the US for a little while, and with surprising frequency in the 1800s, there was drunk as Cooter Brown. Cooter Brown was a fictional character who, rather than being drafted by the Union or the Confederacy during the American Civil War, supposedly opted to just remain drunk and sit it out.
Again, we do not condone this behavior. Moderators of YouTube.
let's see. There was also plotzed, as a word. That's a Yiddish one. And then pifflicated.
What was that one?
Pifflicated, which is first found in Harper's Magazine, probably a variation on spifflicated, which is a little bit older.
Squiffy. That's a nice, genteel one. Oh, it's a bit squiffy.
There's also how came you so, or how come you so, which is like a minced oath for drunkenness. Please excuse her. She's a bit, how came you so?
There's a satirical magazine in England called Private Eye. And when they want to talk about usually a member of parliament being inebriated, they describe them as tired and emotional.
Oh, no.
He was tired and emotional in the Commons bar.
Okay. One particularly colorful one I've seen is someone who has acknowledged the corn, which appears in date back to the 1800s in American dialects.
I think he's acknowledged the corn.
And then finally, my last one is drunk as a boiled owl, which is recorded as early as 1848 in Indiana.
What does it mean?
I feel like that one's just generally fanciful, unless somebody's been boiling owls in Indiana.
Okay, it's time to ring the bell and call time at the bar. We're done with this episode all about booze.
Indeed, it's closing time on Words Unraveled. We'll see you next week.
I'm Alastair Campbell from The Rest Is Politics.
Nish Kumar here from Pod Save the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Pod Save the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September.
Lowe's knows how to get you ready for holiday hosting with up to 35% off select home decor. And get up to 35% off select major appliances. Plus, members get free delivery, haulaway, basic installation, parts, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 10/1. Member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Installed by independent contractors. Exclusions apply. See Lowe's.com for more details.
I'm Alastair Campbell from The Rest Is Politics.
Nish Kumar here from Pod Save the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Pod Save the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September.